This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, not actually with me, we're all social distancing, but in cyberspace, with me, Cam Ruslan, we have from the morning run, Sim Wee Boon.
Hello.
Hello, who suddenly put his camera on something else, so he disappeared and that confused me. And we have also from BFM, you used to hear her much more often, talking about movies, etc. But she's now in a much more managerial role at Sim's boss, in fact. She is...
Everyone's boss.
Everyone's boss. Julian Yap.
Oh, God.
Hello.
How are you two holding up?
Good. How are you, Ken?
Okay. It's nice to... I mean, I'm living here with my wife, which is fantastic, and my cat, but you're the first two actual other humans I've spoken to for a long time.
I'm okay because I still go into work because broadcasting is essential services. So we kind of do the whole team A, team B thing. So 1 week I go in, 1 week I don't go in. So I still see human faces.
Oh, okay. So, our three topics this week are: topic number one is the Spanish flu. Topic number two is missing things and trying to re-find things that you've lost. I think I got that right. And finally, topic number three is this the new normal? So with topic number one, the Spanish flu or the 1918 flu, I thought it might be interesting to talk about this because it was, before COVID-19, the most virulent flu epidemic that has happened in the last, well, in modern times. And it killed an estimated, well, no one really knows, anywhere between 20 million and 100 million people worldwide. It was actually particularly devastating in India, and some of the worst places were Pacific Islands, like, say, West Samoa, where 22% of the population died. And unlike the COVID-19, it was especially deadly to young and healthy people, which is quite un-flu-like. In fact, my great aunt Matty in South Wales died from the Spanish flu, and she was 19 years old. And the reason why it hurt young and healthy people is because it stimulated the immunosuppressant system, overstimulated, so that your body actually... where you sort of killed yourself. Whereas if you were older, your immunosuppressant system wasn't so strong, so it didn't overreact. The reason why it was called the Spanish flu is it had nothing to do with Spain. It didn't come from Spain. But 1918 was the final year of the First World War, from 1914 to 1918. And all the countries that were fighting had censorship in their press. And nobody also wanted to be the owner of a flu virus that was killing the world. Spain, on the other hand, was neutral. So the Spanish newspapers reported it. And so everybody jumped on the opportunity to call it the Spanish flu. The same kind of levels of racism that we find now, because the flu itself may have come from Kansas in the United States. It may have come.
Or British troops in France, apparently.
Or British troops in France. So, you know, none of these people wanted to lay claim to the virus. And I some of the responses to it when it was happening were eerily similar. One, that kind of racist attitude to the naming of this flu. Also, it came in waves. It came in three waves. And the second wave was actually the most deadly. And one of the reasons why is because people relaxed. You had also returning troops and people going back to school, just things opening up. And then you had a really deadly epidemic. And one of the great ironies, sad ironies, well, I don't know, is it sad? Is actually Donald Trump's grandfather himself died from the 1918 flu. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about it just to see if we can find any parallels, because one of the strange things about Spanish flu is that no one remembered it. And Sim, later we're talking about a new normal, and I'm wondering, I don't know if we'll, once we're over it, I think it'll just be like, oh, well, that's done.
Yeah, that'd be part of the conversation I want to have as well. But yeah, we focus on yours first, which is the parallels. And I think the most distinctive parallel that you can draw immediately is, like you said, the naming of the flu. You know, it didn't come from Spain, and people called it the Spanish flu, and there was a lot of racist connotation. You know, back then when this flu went viral, when you meet a Spanish person, you're like, oh, get away from me and stuff like that. And, you know, that kind of poured over into what's happening now. People called it the Chinese flu, the Wuhan flu. And that, of course, led to increased, you know, racism in Australia, in the UK, you know, in basically in America and all these places. So, you know, and, you know, there are actually debates going on. People are saying that, well, it did start in Wuhan, so what's wrong with calling it the Chinese flu? But at the same time, WHO has given it a name. There is a name to the disease. There is no need to call it the Chinese flu. So, you know, there's a lot of these kind of like, at the one hand, people are saying that it's a bit too sensitive. At the other hand, people are saying that it's, you know, it's right to be sensitive. So, you know, I think that's one of the immediate parallels that you can draw from the Spanish flu.
Julian, were you aware of the 1918 flu?
Yeah, I am, but only in probably very abstract terms, in that it is a part of history. We learn about the Black Death, and we learn about the Spanish flu in the same way that you do in school. It is something that happened. There's a lot of things that we haven't had to go through. So a lot of things do feel very, very, I feel very, very removed from. So when, like, I think with the start of all this, when the word pandemic was starting to get used, my brain couldn't, you know, fathom what that could mean. I knew what it meant in terms of the definition of it, spreading, but I didn't know what that could mean in terms of people contracting it, the measures that we'd have to take, the actual fatality of it. I didn't get that. So I kind of wish that I'd known more about the Spanish flu, or even given context for it in my education, because of how important it is now. But also, I don't know how much we are learning from it now, how much we're using the 1918 pandemic as a blueprint for work that's being done now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge subject. Actually, we have to move on from it already. We've run out of time. But folks, you know, go have a look at the 1918 flu. The chances are that your family, wherever they were affected by it, it estimated that in the Dutch East Indies, Indonesia, about 1.5 million people died, and obviously that's right next door, so we would have had the same. Sim, did you?
Do we have numbers for that?
I haven't come across any. I haven't. But
do we have? Is there a vaccine or a cure or something for it already?
There never was a vaccine. I think that's also one of the interesting aspects, is there was never a vaccine. So the present UK government response has been particularly bad to COVID-19, and they're talking about herd immunity, and running hot, just running it hot, just letting it happen. And that is precisely what happened with the 1918 flu. It just happened. And so what they're suggesting now is just let everyone die, because there was never a vaccine, and nor was there really ever any immunity. The virus merely probably mutated to a less extreme version so that it no longer killed the host so quickly. No one really knows exactly what what that strain was. So we must move on. And so, Julian, what is your topic?
So I'd like to talk about how something that I find a lot of comfort and a lot of joy in, so specifically for me, which is watching movies, watching films, anything that I want to watch to fill time, I haven't been able to do over the last month or so. A little bit before the MCO started, but it really kicked in when the MCO started. And I don't know if this might have affected you guys as well, because I do know it has affected people, other people who enjoy film as much as I do. So basically for me, at the start of it, I think 2 days, like the day that the MCO was announced, couldn't watch anything except Contagion, which is a choice. And then after Contagion, I had to watch Safe, which is a film by Todd Haynes starring Julianne Moore, which is about a woman who thinks she has contracted an environmental illness and she goes into self-isolation, which was a choice as well. And I didn't know that. I hadn't seen it or anything. I just knew that I needed to watch that. And then from there, it sort of dropped off into not being able to watch anything at all, because a lot of my film watching, movie watching, my consumption of entertainment is very much tied to me being at home and it's what I do on the weekends. Like, it once that became a normal state of being, I wasn't able to do that anymore. And I know this is a very personal account, but I did also, which was, I think, the most interesting part of this for me, was that I found that a lot of people, and of course, this is a very small community, and very, very few people that I do know, haven't been able to enjoy movies, TV shows in the kind of same way, or at least the discovery of it in the same way. And I do this, I would have usually, if this was, you know, business as usual, I would have talked about this as a form of guilty pleasure, of trying to find some kind of comfort in something that you're watching. But I stumbled across this on Twitter about like a month ago, probably start of March. And Dana Stevens, who is a movie critic at Slate, she tweeted, she did a whole Twitter thread about how she does something called homeopathic watching, which is watching something not because it will make you feel better, but watching something because you have to, because it's something that you need to get out of your system. So for her, in her Twitter thread, she explains this is something, homeopathic watching is a term that she came up with herself when in her 20s, when she was deeply depressed and watching her way through all of Ingrid Bergman's work, which, Ingmar Bergman, yeah, which is a whole other Bergman. Yeah. I've seen this happen with a lot of other people. So over Twitter, over a social media platform called Letterboxd, where you get to log films that you do watch, people are, you know, it turned to typically things that you wouldn't have to think about. Like I watched Ghost Rider 1 and 2 and the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Things are not that bad.
I love those shows.
They're great. Oh man, Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider is gotten.
Yeah, no, it's not. Sim, what do you make of Julian's predicament?
Well, I think it makes sense, and I'm sure there are people that have their viewing habits affected. But for me, it's fine. Like, I'm still watching TV like normal. I'm still watching the shows that I watch like normal. I mean, I have like cyclical periods where I go through wanting to watch like very serious movies, you know, some David Lynch kind of thing, and then there are periods where I just want to watch like Step Brothers or Stephen Chow. So that's still
That would be your normal.
I mean, I guess nothing's really changed actually for me in terms of my viewing habits.
Well, I guess it doesn't have to be viewing habits specifically, but like anything that you find deep comfort when you use.
I think for me, okay, going back to viewing habits, the only thing has changed is that I'm not going to the cinemas anymore, which is something that I quite enjoy. But that's because, you know, what's going on. But in terms of habits that have been formed, I've started cooking more, and I find it quite therapeutic. I find it quite, you know, interesting, you know. So that's something that is interesting, I guess. And I've seen that a lot of people are cooking more.
Are you going to keep that up, do you think?
That's the thing. I don't know. You know, that's going to be part of the new normal conversation that I want to have. Right, like, will this habit pour over, or is it just for now?
I think actually the three of us, the three corners of a triangle. Do triangles have corners? Because if Julian, you want to sort of jump in there and watch Contagion, and if Sim is just business as usual, I am actually of the I want to get away from it kind of thing, but at the same time, so much is not relevant anymore. I don't know if I could watch Step Brothers.
You ever watched it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like it a lot. But I mean, a couple of weeks ago on A Bit of Culture, I talked about reading Charles Dickens. I started reading Charles Dickens and discovered somebody that really made sense, because he lived in a world where people could suddenly drop dead from mystery illnesses. Where life was a long, healthy life was absolutely not a certainty. And
And you just read this as part of you just read this just now as part of the MCO, like revisited
it. I'm nothing but reading Charles Dickens at the moment. But and this will also touch upon my recommendation is I jumped into watching the whole penultimate season of Modern Family. I wanted that escape and that light relief. I couldn't watch Contagion. I really couldn't. I just couldn't jump in. I don't want to.
I watched Contagion. I watched the Contagion, I think a day or 2 days before the MCO was implemented at my friend's place with a bunch of my friends. And it was amazing.
But I guess what you're saying, Cam, is also you are reading all of Charles Dickens. That is a change. You're going through something, watching all of something. I had to go through all of Brad Pitt's movies. Like it's a different.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
You sometimes have to watch all of Brad Pitt. But yeah, I do recognize this is a non-problem, and this is
absolutely. But Julian, this is what it's like been going through my head all the time of these last few weeks is where can my head be? It cannot be where it was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't want to. I don't know. Yeah, it is a strange one. Well, look, we're gonna come out of this topic now, but it is one that's with me all the time. But in a moment, we're going to be, I guess, bringing all these things together and asking about the new normal here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Julian Yap, and Sim Wee Boon. And now, Sim, the question that we don't know the answer to yet, what is going to be the new normal?
Yeah, so I want to talk about the new normal because, it's this word that's been thrown around. Everyone's been saying, this is the new normal. That is the new normal. After this is the new normal. So I kind of want to talk about it. Like, what exactly is the new normal? And, is the new normal really here to stay? Because I think, Malaysians being Malaysians, people being people, we tend to forget things, especially things that we find that are inconvenient to us. But then again, at the same time, a lot of things that have changed in this course of 1 month, more than a month, and we don't know how long more, that it's quite possibly that will affect a lot of things after we're out of this COVID-19 pandemic. So I kind of want to talk about the new normal. And I want to start by asking, like, both of you guys, like, what do you think life will be like once people find a vaccine for COVID-19, once we've gotten out of this? What will life be like? Will it go back to kind of like pre-COVID-19, 2019 kind of stuff? Or will we actually live kind of like, will society act and live differently?
Julian, what do you think?
I'd want to think that it'd be different. But I don't know if that is possible. I don't know. It's sort of like how I think about 2 or 3 weeks into the MCO, there were still people going out. And if you go to supermarkets, there are still people going in twos. And I think it's not that no one's ignoring anything. It's that I think everyone does sort of want some sort of semblance of normalcy, that they will resort back to business as usual and how they usually would do anything. But I like that there are more measures being taken in terms of hygiene. I like that that's something that that is being done. I think Venice yesterday announced that they are using this as an opportunity to improve accessibility and build out their roads so it's better for pedestrians and bikes and it's stuff like that. It's like little changes that I wish could happen. I'd like the idea of having more importance on remote working, and we can see the importance of cloud computing in that, but obviously the dangers of it as well. But then also what that means in terms of childcare, healthcare also, if you can work from home a little bit more. But I don't know. I think I don't want to. I don't think my brain can fathom anything past a week, because it doesn't seem like it's gonna end very, very soon. And I don't really. if anything, the one thing that I want is that even if the new normal does kind of have measures that we do have to take, so we will be more mindful of being of walking a little bit, at least like a meter apart from each other. I think what I do want is a removal of any sort of the anxiety that's kind of plagued everything for the last few weeks. That's what I want.
Yeah, I don't know if I think there might be different stages of new normal. We're in one normal now. Then there'll be a stage where it's kind of easing off. Maybe we're not so sure. It might come back. It has come back, you know, the transitional phase. And then one day, I don't know, 18 months from now, we will be thinking, it's gone. It's over. And that new normal could be filled with a lot of exuberance and such joy that we can get back to things and then throwing ourselves into the old normal and just forgetting this phase. I mean, if you look at the 1918 flu, it was forgotten about so fast. In America, they did do social distancing during that time, and now not. Now there's a whole culture against it. Some of us are old enough to remember the Black Death of 1350, and that killed a third.
Some of us are old enough, huh?
Yeah, some of us. That killed like a third of humanity. But one of the strange things about it is once it was over, it was not depicted in artwork. No one wrote about it. It was just simply forgotten. And people just didn't just go back to life, but in a really joyful, exuberant way. So I wonder.
Which is weird, right? Because all this should have served as a lesson that we bring, you know, to the future, you know, that we learn from our past. You know, even the most recent, like the Spanish flu, you know, the social distancing. I mean, the fact that when this pandemic came and people were relearning kind of like these social distancing thing and all, it just makes me feel like maybe, you know, yeah, maybe the new normal will be this whole social distancing. People will be cleaner and try to live more, you know, cleaner lives for like a small amount of time, and we might just fall back into kind of like the old ways, you know, the old kind of like I want to say dangerous, but you know, like, but but again, you know, it doesn't surprise me because, you know, humans, people are, we're kind of like very social creatures, you know. Yes, there are people that like the distance, the, you know, stay 1 meter apart from me, but most of us are, you know, we like crowds, we like to be among groups of people, we like to be with each other. I mean, even now with the restrictions in place, you know, you still have people like, I want to go see my boyfriend, I want to go see this, I want to go see my friends, you know. I mean, we have politicians that like are out and about, you know. And I don't think it comes from this like rebelling against authority thing. I think it stems from more of like needing a human connection, needing to kind of like do what comes naturally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I hope, actually, I don't know if it's be a good or bad thing, but this working from home culture that we have now, you know, like it goes to show that a lot of things you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be done in the office. You know, I think
it could be a real game changer, this one. Actually.
Yeah. I mean, Cam and I, we've had experience in this in a, you know, a previous publication we've worked with where our, you know, boss was kind of like expects all his journalists to be in the office instead of being out the office, which is kind of weird. Yeah. So,
yeah, because it's one thing that discovered is it's funny thing is that boss was actually, he was actually Scottish, wasn't he? Was he Scottish? Well, he was British.
Yeah, he was.
And, Scottish. But I found very much also in an Asian context is bosses think they own you. During that period, 9 to 5, they own you and they want to see you there. They want to see you not necessarily working, but at least pretending to work and suffering through life.
But they want that control, you know? Yeah. But it's also that control, right? Yeah. And now with whatever's in place, I mean, I don't really, you know, is the control still there?
Maybe.
You know,
I mean, because I don't think there's any reason, there never was a reason, a necessity for rush hour. Rush hour has never needed to exist. And this could be a cue to say that rush hour need never exist. People can work from home. You can have staggered openings. There's no reason why anybody needs to be at 9 o'clock. You could be exactly there
right.
30.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So that if there is a new normal, that would be a very good that new normal. Really that I feel, good, you know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That would be, you know, the staggered openings. There's no need for everyone to crowd and rush to a specific place. But another point I want to bring up with the new normal is also something that's kind of like quite important. I think is that is of civil liberty, is of surveillance. Ooh. You know, because you know, for a lot of the countries that were quoted to have worked with their containment or their strategy dealing with COVID-19, were countries that actually, in some way or another, had mass surveillance. They kept tabs on you via their phones, via the surveillance mm-hmm. cameras. You know, there was constant check-in. There was, I mean, you know, if you want to be crass about it, there was constant intrusions into your privacy. You know, people will say that, you know, but that's needed to make sure that the society is safe. But hasn't that always been the reason that governments use for mass surveillance? So I don't know how people will feel coming out of this, that, you know, right. mass surveillance, the constant check-ins. Well, yeah, well,
Julian, you're a millennial. This is going to be your world. Sim, on the other hand, he's an old millennial. He's like on his with his walking cane.
We're not that far apart.
Yeah, my back's hurting.
There's a big difference. Like 2 weeks, I've discovered, is a big difference. So, Julian, I mean, what is the new normal that you expect and that you would like?
I think in terms of privacy surveillance, it feels like we've co-opted into that already. We've not given up our own privacy or our security or anything, but we are all of this working from home, being able to communicate with people that you love remotely. This has all been possible because we want to do it. And we came up with new ways to do it. We're watching Netflix together with other people in different houses, in different countries over Netflix party. Like, it's something that we kind of adapted to. And I feel like in a way it's sort of, that sharing of information is done in goodwill, that I feel that going forward, that is what we'll have to do. Like right now, when we need it, when we most need to be connected, we are very connected. And I like that a lot. I like that a lot of people have found that their anxieties in terms of video calls and voice calls, that has kind of taken backseat because of the need for communicating with other people. I like that more people are able to speak to each other because of that. And I think that if the new normal is basically a more connected normal, I like that a lot, even if the circumstances are terrible.
Okay, the new normal is something we're going to have to wait for. But generally, I mean, assuming that we survive this and that our loved ones survive it, Are either of you confident, not confident that it might be a better world or not better world?
I think it depends on how you look at it. For some, it might be better. For some, it might not be better. I mean, for those that have lost their jobs, lost a lot of things during this period, I doubt that they will come out of this smiling. But I mean, if you are the shareholder of a Zoom stock, you're going to come out of this smiling.
Julian?
Yeah, it's the same. I think there's a way to look at it very, very optimistically. There are obviously people who have been more badly affected than any of us are. But in terms of I don't know. Like, I think I can't brain it. I can't think of it because there's so much fear and anxiety attached to what life is now that I don't really know how to get out of it. And I think what Sim's saying, right, like there's only, you know, being optimistic about it that is possible right now.
Yeah. I just say, you're looking at historical precedents. I don't know. It doesn't really suggest that anything much changes. If we can, I'm enjoying looking out the window and seeing really clear skies, and it would be nice if we could, you know, have that afterwards. Anyway, we must move on. Gonna move on now to recommendations, final part of the show, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest, and we're gonna have to do this one quite quickly. So the first recommendation will be mine. In terms of viewing, I have been watching nothing but Community, the now defunct TV yeah. sitcom.
They have the entire thing on Netflix now.
Yeah. Yeah. And my brain's getting a bit addled because it's like all I see is just those people sitting around a desk. And I don't know what reality is and what isn't. But community is great. It's set in a community college in Colorado, I think, with a bunch of misfits, and it really explores pop culture genres and tropes, etc., and also a sense of community and what friendship is. And it's a group of friends who appear to, well, not really like each other, but anyway, I really love it. It's over now, but it was really good, and now I've got a chance to watch it all. So, Julian, what's your recommendation?
Now I really want to watch Community. I don't know.
You should.
I should. Yeah, I've actually never seen it. I dropped off after the first few episodes, so I might actually go back to watch it. So thank
good.
You.
Yeah, do. Ooh,
you like if Cam thing. If Cam advocates for it, for sure.
Go ahead.
I'll do that. My recommendation would be Stop Making Sense by Jonathan Demme. It's a 1984 film, 1985 film. It's a filmed concert of Talking Heads after their album that they released in 1983. It is a cult classic. I know a lot of people. Cam, have you seen it?
I have.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to recommend it as to watch now, because that is the film that broke me out of my funk of the last few weeks, because it was the first thing that I put on that felt like it had the energy of everything that I was feeling at the moment. It has, it's just how Talking Heads' music is and how David Byrne is, his energy on stage. It's very restless and it's uncontrolled. It kind of feels like you're shaking off a lot of anxiety. It's very, very restless. It feels like, there's parts of the concert where David Byrne just runs around the stage, or he runs in place, and it feels like he's letting out every single thing in his body. And it feels like that's what I want right now. I want to let out like some kind of cathartic scream. And I didn't think that this was the movie that would do it. But it was, and it's filmed very close, so you feel like it performed just for you, and you hardly see the audience at all. It's very intimate and by design, so I feel like it's kind of perfect for right now. You don't really see a lot of people grouped together in a concert, which is very terrifying to think of right now. I loved it.
Were you a fan of Talking Heads before?
Oh yeah, and it's a film I love very much, but I put it on because I felt like I needed something to remind me of what it felt like, that feeling of a concert was like. But it gave me the opposite feeling, which was comfort.
Yeah, and also modern music is rubbish, and it was better in the past. I mean, that's obviously the.
Oh no! Yeah, like yeah, they're
sure,
their
sure,
album
sure,
is
sure, sure, sure.
Good. I'm glad you agree. Okay, so Stop Making Sense, concert movie of Talking Heads, directed by the late Jonathan Demme. And now, Sim, what's yours?
Oh, my recommendation is some complete trash. It's a show on Netflix. It's a reality show. It's called Too Hot to Handle. It's completely ridiculous, and your brain will regress from watching it. But it's one of those things where you watch without thinking, and it's like it's so bad and cringy that you can't stop watching. Yeah, so the premise for this reality show is they have like it's set in an island, and you have a really good looking guys and really good looking girls that are living in the island, and they'll be living there for like a month, I think, and the one condition for living there is that they cannot have any physical romantic intimacy. They are there to learn to grow deeper and emotional connections, you know. And for every like kiss or whatever, the money gets deducted. And for like, they all have a prize pool. Like, you know, if you can live there for a month, you get this money. But, you know, if you kiss, then we'll cut this off. If you, you know, hold hands, but do something else, they will deduct the money. And it's so cringy because like all these good looking men and women that are put in this island, you know, they're young, and they don't look for committed relationships and all that stuff. So they talk about how, you know, like, well, it's like heaven here, you know, all these hot girls, hot guys, da, 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 da. And as the show progresses, you know, like it's trash, but wow, you can't stop watching. Yeah.
So what if they go into full purdah, they get extra money?
Yeah. So it starts off with $100,000, you know. Yeah. It's also like, so they're being watched by this this Alexa-like thing called Lana. It's like this like tiny little lamp device that's sprayed throughout the island and the resort. And, you know, they'll be like, notifications like, hello everyone, please come to this the room, you know, I have an announcement to make. And then she'll be like, a rule was broken last night, you know, this person and this person kissed, you know, as such $3,000 will be deducted, like kind of stuff like that. So then you get to see the characters that develop from the show, which is quite surprising because character development, right? But yeah, you know, you see these people that like, you know, like, oh, you know, like you know, he's like, I'm the accountant, you know, I'm gonna make sure everyone follows the rules, you know. You got this other person that's like, you know, like, I don't care about the rules, you know, like, I'm gonna, like, I love her and I want her. Stop. It's so ridiculous. These people have no concept of what a real relationship is like, and it's just hilarious.
It sounds like a really sexy version of George Orwell's 1984.
Not that far off, but it's, yeah, it's more like a really bad The Bachelor. You know?
Don't knock it. One of those people is going to be the president of the United States one day.
Yeah, I mean... that's the thing. It's not even American. Like there's British. There are British people, and there's American. There's an Australian there, so it's quite global, I guess.
Okay, Julian, you gonna watch it?
I wanted to so badly. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't think that. I don't know. I saw this article. I think it was on Vogue or a Hollywood Reporter that was saying that. The producers of Too Hot to Handle could not have predicted the environment of the time that they released their show in. So it's either very perfect for a very specific audience or it's the complete 180 for another specific kind of audience. So
yeah. I saw that article.
I don't know where I am in that.
It's interesting. I mean, the show was shot last year, so there's no social distancing needed. But it's just interesting to see pretty people complain about not being able to kiss each other.
Okay. All right, Sim.
Are you watching it, Cam?
No, I'm not.
Are you going to watch it?
Okay, I'll give it a try. Why not? What the heck? You know, I trust Sim's aesthetic.
It's not tasteful. It's not Too Hot to Handle. It's not a documentary or Talking Heads. It's not a David Lynch film. You know, it's really trashy reality TV goes.
All right, okay. I'm going to check it out then. So anyway, so on that, we come to the end of this week's episode. And only remains me now to thank Sim Weeboon and Julian
Good
Yap.
To be here.
Thank you so much.
Myself, Cam Rastlan. And good luck to us all in the next coming weeks. Sim, you're in the news room. Do you have any insight into how many more weeks we got this?
Well, people are saying that it might get extended. We won't really know until the government comes out to say something. But whatever happens, you know, social distancing still applies. You know, we all gotta, you know, the new normal for now should be that whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're practicing now, you continue with it.
Okay. Well, a day may come when the three of us may actually meet again in person. And also for you out there, folks, perhaps one day you will actually get to meet again people that you once knew as physical three-dimensional objects and see them as that again. So thank you very much. And please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.